Game one.
Bounce down to Giannis. Catches on ties. Hook shot down with a foul.
To game 72.
It is in the bank. It is earning interest. This one is over.
And beyond.
And the magic number for clinching the top seed in the Eastern Conference
the
is down
to place
to
be for the big picture on the Bucks. This is Bucks Talk, presented by Gruber Law Offices. One call, that's all. Trends, tendencies, and trajectories of your Milwaukee Bucks, as well as all around the NBA.
I think this team is going to be even better than the last couple of years, and those teams are pretty darn good.
Now, here's your hosts, Justin Garcia and Greg Matzik.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome in. Chilly Friday night. Entertaining basketball game in Cleveland. The Bucks kicking off a six-game road trip with an 18-point win over the Cleveland Cavaliers, 123-105. Welcome in. It's Bucks Talk on WTMJ and 94.5 ESPN. Greg Matzik and Justin Garcia with you. Greg Hill producing the program. We'll take you till 10:30. 855-616-1620 if you'd like to join us. Very interesting night here. The NBA is closing in on a decision that I think is reckless. So do some players in the league. Very bizarre situation developing tonight in Brooklyn that affects the Nets and their star Kevin Durant. All sorts of stuff going on in the association. But we begin in Cleveland. Justin, an 18-point win for the Bucks, but this was a two-point game with 11 minutes to play. In the fourth quarter, the Cavaliers are an interesting team. They might be a year away, but they made things a little challenging for the Bucks early on. We'll break it down in detail here, but I think this is a pretty good win over a team that's at least going in the right direction and certainly a team that looked much different than the one the Bucks saw and beat earlier this season.
Well, I mean, Cleveland's certainly an interesting team, and, you know, right now, J.B. Bickerstaff is probably the coach of the year for the job that he's done with that team and the young talent that they have. And you can see the nice pieces they have with Colin Sexton, obviously the biggest one there, but Jared Allen as well. That's a nice duo. And I know Darius Garland's in the mix as well, but that's a nice duo that they have to build around. I think what was the best part about this win for the Bucks, though, was just the schedule. And, you know, as we heard on the pregame and we heard the story earlier in the day, the Bucks weren't able to go to Cleveland last night, that they were on, you know, they were getting ready to depart, and then everything got put on hold. So they didn't have to deal with that, and it kind of compressed their whole schedule, brought them into Cleveland and having to travel and play a game the same day for night one of the back-to-back. That, to me, is what made this the best part of the win.
Yeah, Booty called it kind of like a back-to-back sort of situation. And in terms of preparation going into tonight's game, of course, it will be a back-to-back situation with the Bucks playing Cleveland tomorrow. This was an interesting game in that it felt a little, for three quarters anyway, like a 2001 basketball game, right? Just living in the paint. You got Andre Drummond, kind of a traditional center. He'll step aside or outside every once in a while. But it had that flow as both teams were not specifically in a rhythm from three. It changed a little bit for the Bucks in the fourth quarter, but I like that the Bucks were able to win and win convincingly without their beyond the arc bread and butter. This was more about destroying a team in the paint and then clamping down on defense as the game went on. The paint number 74-58, a decisive advantage for the Bucks tonight.
Yeah, and look, Cleveland's one of those teams that doesn't take a whole lot of threes. So we've seen now two straight games where the defense has certainly bounced back and played much better against the perimeter. You know, as we talked about after the Pacers game, I don't think that it's a case of, well, they're just playing teams that aren't really shooting that well, so that kind of helped them. Now, tonight it was a different story where that was definitely the case. But 74 points in the paint, and I got to go through and look, but I believe that is an NBA high this season. I know we've had some big totals for points in the paint in the early going, but 74 is certainly a season high for the Bucks. I believe they had one that was 68. Maybe they hit 70 under Bud last year, but this, I believe, is also a high under Bud. I mean, 74 points that you scored in the paint. We're not that far removed from, you know, 100 or 105 points scored being the norm, and now you're saying you're scoring 75% of that just in the paint.
Everybody in here, stat?
I know you all like stats, so let me give you some.
Boss, here's our stat for the day.
Yeah, it's part of the reason the Bucks shot 51.5% from the field. The paint points were insane. I think if you look at the box score here, Justin, and you didn't see the game, you didn't listen to the game, you see the Bucks shot 7 of 22 from 3, and you're saying, wow, well, they got away with one tonight. And, of course, the paint points certainly make a difference. 7 of 22 from 3 is not a great night. It will be one of the worst nights the Bucks have from 3 throughout the season. But they were 4 of 6 in the fourth quarter from 3. So not only did they hold Cleveland to 16 points in the fourth quarter, and Cleveland's field goal percentage went down with every passing quarter, and the Bucks went up with every passing quarter with a slight dip in the fourth. But I count 4 of 6 from 3 in the fourth. So they ramped it up when they needed to most on both ends.
Yeah, it's the third time this season that they didn't knock down double digits of three-pointers. But 7 of 22, I mean, the volume isn't – it's not ideal for how we've seen Bud run this offense. But 7 of 22 is much better than, what was it, 7 of 36, I think, against the Knicks, which was also the only other time they hit 7. So yeah, I think the big takeaway that I had was Giannis talked about this after the Pacers game with getting that triple-double through three quarters. And, you know, that was two straight games, which is going to lead into my stat, Greg, of not taking a three-pointer. And Giannis said, look, there's no edict to not shoot threes. I'm just doing what the defense has given me. Miles Turner is playing me a lot tighter on the perimeter. They defended me for the three tonight. They kind of did the same thing, they being the Blazers, that, you know, I'm growing more and more confident, and he said mature, in figuring out how to attack these defenses and not going through defenders, but going around them and passing. And it was kind of the same tonight, where the Bucks just took what the Cavs gave them, and what the Cavs gave them were shots at the basket with 74 points in the paint.
Isn't that interesting, that just the philosophical difference here? So Coach Bud is hell-bent on taking away the paint in the restricted area, to where he'll let those threes fly against his team. And at times it's burned the Bucks this year, as we've noted on this program. I was watching the Cavs play tonight. Their three-point defense, it's not as great as their overall defense throughout this season. They're a pesky defensive team. But, man, they were fighting over everything. Occasional switches, but fighting over everything. There was no sinking into the lane on a three-point shooter. They were tight. It felt like, to me, the three-point shot in the first quarter especially, there just weren't a lot of great looks. I mean, some of the Bucks' looks came in transition, but to set up for a three in the half court was a real challenge. And the Cavs are just, they're a team that's going to do that. But the philosophical difference, I thought, was interesting. And to your point, the Bucks just said, oh, fine, the hell with this. We'll just exploit the paint because we can win that way too.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, the Bucks. What the Bucks do too with that drop defense is it's almost a rarity that not a whole lot of teams run it that way. That the Bucks do. So the Cavs are a little more pesky, as you mentioned. And the difference with the Cavs is they have some of these guys. I mean, Isaac Okoro, Sexton, and Garland, guys that defend the perimeter very well. But yeah, just I know Andre Drummond is a guy that gets a lot of 20-20 games and gets a lot of double doubles. But Andre Drummond is not a rim protector, and that I think, you know, highlighted by the fact that the Bucks scored 74, which by the way is not a season high. So I don't know if I should reveal this and just sound like a complete nerd, but Greg, I keep my own statistics here, and I have a rolling Excel sheet that I update the data from every game played. And the season high so far is 76 from the Indiana Pacers, which they scored very early in the season, points in the paint.
You sure that's not just a rolling file cabinet that you have? Like, you've got notes upon notes upon notes. You know, do you bring your own filing cabinet to the arena?
I do. It's not the most convenient to wheel that rolling filing cabinet in here with everything else I have to bring in, but it's got to be done. My stat would be 3. So the Bucks are now 69 and 19 in games where Giannis takes 3 or fewer three-point attempts. Of course, he did it tonight. They won the game, and it just feels like that's probably the sweet spot. If he takes 2 or 3 threes a night, you'll live with that. You don't really want to see more than that. And, you know, when the situation warrants it, take it. But it's the early in the shot clock. You're starting to build some momentum that you've talked about before. And you just get to the top of the key and put up a three. Those are what you want to avoid. Do it within rhythm. Do a couple. just to keep the defense honest, but you don't really want to see more than that. So that's what I was trying to say with those numbers that we put out there the other night, that they're 9-0 under Bud in games where Giannis doesn't take a stat. I know you can manipulate the numbers to tell any narrative you want. As somebody pointed out, I think the Bucks are 3-0 in games where Giannis makes four or more three. So there's a number to tell every story. But I think we've seen if you can keep it around three, that's probably the ideal number for Giannis in this offense.
You know, and this was a game too, Justin. The Bucks trailed after one. And if you look for a common trait in their losses this year, check the first quarter stats. They're typically trailing going into the second quarter. Not only did they trail after the first, but they trailed at the half in this game. So they found a way to get better and better. And I wonder how much of that was an adjustment to the way the three-point shot was being defended and subsequently not going down. The numbers ramped up a little bit in that fourth quarter, like we mentioned, but this was three quarters worth of, it's just not going down from three. Cavs had something to do with it. But this was not a front-running 18-point win. We've seen 18-point wins look dominant, right? We saw a 20-point win in which the Bucks led by 40. This was much tighter. This was much, much tighter. It was a two-point game in the fourth quarter, but I love that they could win this way. I wouldn't say it was pretty. Wasn't a great night from three. The Cavs had a better night than expected, perhaps, from three. And they found a way to come back after trailing at the half.
I think this may be the first game the Bucks have won this season when they were trailing at the half, too, which is something that they seem to do regularly, that it didn't really matter. And that was, you know, the interesting thing to me, as we've heard the 48 minutes tossed around by Bud for the last few years, and we've heard Bobby Portis and a few other players mention it, Drew Holiday talking about it as well after that Blazers win, where, you know, we just needed to play 48 minutes. And for as much as that gets tossed around, it's interesting to me in that the meaning seems to have changed the last couple of years, where I know Bud wants this team to play a complete game, and he's always going to preach about the defense. But what we learned from that 48-minute mantra in the first 2 years here, and especially last year, was the opponent basically has to play 48 minutes to have a chance to beat the Bucks with the way that they were playing. That it was more so, hey, you got to bring it for all four quarters if you're going to beat us. And now it's, you know, shifted back to, we have the talent to do this, but we haven't really put together many complete games. And tonight's game was definitely one of those as well. After seeing maybe one and a half of those against the Blazers and the Pacers. But now it's shifted more towards, all right, we have the talent. We can be one of these elite teams, but we got to get back into that rhythm of doing it more consistently and playing all four quarters.
Defensive uptick for the Bucks in this game, and offensive uptick for the Bucks as well. Here's Coach Bud after the game on the difference between what he saw in the first quarter and then in the second half.
You know, I thought the first quarter was, you know, just we kind of felt like we struggled on both ends. And, you know, and then offensively we got a little bit better. And you said, you know, I think we were down three. And, you know, I think they had a couple of plays at the end of the quarter to get to that. So it was a strange start. It was a strange first half. But I thought we got a lot better from the first quarter to the second quarter. It was probably more offensive than defensive that we improved. And then third quarter and fourth quarter defensively, it felt like we got better in those quarters.
You know, you take away the three-point stats in the fourth quarter, Justin. I mentioned 7 of 22 overall for the Bucks tonight, 4 of 6 in the fourth quarter. You do the math. They're going into the final quarter with just three made threes, yet they find a way to win by 18 points. Here's what Bud had to say about the dominance in the paint versus behind the arc.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we talk a lot about just, you know, taking what the game gives us and making good reads and good decisions. And, you know, there may have been one or two opportunities that where it felt like we passed up maybe an open three or two. But, you know, we were scoring, you know, after the first quarter, we were scoring at a pretty high rate. And, you know, there weren't a lot of good or a lot of threes open. So, you know, we just got to take and score in efficient ways.
123-105, the final. The Bucks improved to 14-8 with the win. Get some rest tonight. Back in the arena tomorrow to face the Cavaliers, who fall to 10-13. Coming up on the other side, the NBA is closing in on plans for an All-Star break, and players aren't happy. It's our poll question of the night at 620 WTMJ on Twitter. Does it make sense, or maybe not? We'll talk about it. It's on the other side. It's Bucks Talk on WTMJ and 94.5 ESPN.
This is Bucks Talk, presented by Gruber Law Offices. One call, that's all. Welcome back to Bucks Talk, presented by Gruber Law Offices. One call, that's all.
Here is Taurean Prince. Ball stolen by Holiday, third in the league in steals. Drew, straight line to the rim, lays it up good with the left hand. Such a good finisher when he gets around the rim. Holiday, 3 for 3 in the game, makes it a one-point game, 63-62.
All five Bucks starters scoring double figures. Hit a 123-105 victory over the Cleveland Cavaliers. Welcome back in. It's Bucks Talk. Greg Matzik and Justin Garcia. Greg Hill producing the program. 855-616-1620 if you'd like to weigh in. Not only on tonight's game, but something developing here in the NBA that I think is very curious. So the last couple of days, we have heard rumblings of a potential All-Star game to be held in Atlanta on March the 7th. So for those keeping score at home, the NBA will go on break March 5th through the 10th. There are no games scheduled right now after March 4th. In about a week off for an All-Star break that we didn't think was going to include a game, and the season will resume as early as March 11th. 2 months ago, Justin, the NBA said, no, we're not going to do this. The All-Star festivities that were planned for Indianapolis were wiped off the books. It's not going to happen. Well, here we are today, February 5th, 2021, and we are just several days away from having not only an All-Star game on March the 7th, East and West, but some sort of skills competition and something representative of what you might see as part of All-Star weekend. Yes, it would be scaled back, but it's an All-Star festivity celebration nonetheless in the city of Atlanta. As you can imagine, there is wide-ranging opinion on the matter. One particular high-ranking official within the NBA, LeBron James, was asked about the situation prior to tonight's game.
I have zero energy and zero excitement about an All-Star game this year. I don't even understand why we're having an All-Star game. But it's the agreement that the Players Association and the league came about. Short off season for myself and my teammates was 71 days. And then coming to the season, we were told that we were not having an All-Star game. So we had a nice little break, 5 days from the 5th through the 10th, an opportunity for me to kind of recalibrate for the second half of the season, my teammates as well, some of the guys in the league. And then they throw an All-Star game on us like this and just breaks that all the way up. So pretty much it kind of a slap in the face. We're also still dealing with a pandemic. We're still dealing with everything that's been going on. And we're going to bring the whole league into one city that's open. The pandemic has absolutely nothing to do with it at this point when it comes to that weekend. Obviously, you guys can see I'm not very happy about it, but it's out of my hands. And, I'll be there if I'm selected, but I'll be there physically but not mentally.
Poll question of the night is up at 620 WTMJ on Twitter. All-Star game makes no sense, or, hey, no big deal, it's just one more game. So far, 87% say that it makes no sense. Justin, how surprised are you that the NBA and the Players Association have come to this conclusion and agreement? What are your overall thoughts on this?
I'm not surprised. We started to hear rumblings of this a couple of weeks ago, and we knew that it was for TV purposes and that they can make a lot of money with this partnership with TNT. And yeah, all of this would be one day that they would have, from the sounds of it, a three-point shootout and a slam dunk contest and then the All-Star game later at night. Their modified plan is that players would come into town on Saturday, they would quarantine or be subject to close quarantining, and they leave immediately after the game and then go back to their home markets. If we're playing devil's advocate, I guess where do you have more faith and trust that you won't have an outbreak, of having players grouped together where you can keep a watchful eye under them and have them quarantined in their hotel room and go through all the procedures, or when you say, okay, you get 5 days off, go back to your home market, and we've seen they're going to be allowed to travel. They just can't leave the U.S., but they're going to be allowed to travel and do whatever they want. That, to me, is just as big of a risk, if not more, than bringing all these players into Atlanta and at least keeping them under your supervision. I just view it from LeBron's standpoint of, okay, I get why the league is doing this. And I understand that, look, there's probably cap implications and other things with the shared revenue between the Players Association and the owners that are at play here. But you can't, I don't know about camp, but it's a tough sell to at least go through all of these changes and things as little as saying, we're not going to allow you to interact with players on the court after the game ends just because we've seen a spike in positive tests, so we really need to limit this interaction. And then, oh, by the way, we're going to put on an exhibition game. Like, that, to me, is where the disconnect is. And I was a little disappointed by LeBron that, you know, for him to say, look, and he spoke more about it last night outside of that quote after their game, but he brought up the points of, look, our team had 71 days off in the offseason. I was looking forward to the All-Star break to just basically recharge my batteries and get ready for the second half of the season, and now that's gone. Well, one thing we learned in the report from Adrian Wojnarowski is there is going to be an opt-out, similar to what they did for the bubble, where you don't have to participate in this if you're a player. And that's where I was disappointed. I mean, if you're LeBron, just don't participate. He said at the very end there, yeah, I'll be there physically but not mentally. Well, I agree with you on the points you raised, so don't go, especially if you have the out of not going.
That's my big wonder, the opt-out rate. How high will it be? I think this is overall startling.
If LeBron is not going to opt out, I get the sense it's not going to be high. And I wonder,
I think this
part
is a startling display of...
Well, I wonder if a part of it is forceful, of a passive-aggressive forcing of, you know, players can opt out, but by the way, LeBron, as the most important player in the league, we need you there. So that is, you aren't subject to that opt-out.
Watch them go and then participate in the slam dunk competition and win it. just double down. Now we get LeBron in the slam dunk competition. To me, this is a startling display of reckless bravado. It doesn't make sense to me. It's unnecessary. It's to fulfill a TV obligation, but hey, 2 months ago it was wiped off the books. It's not like you were planning on this. All of a sudden it becomes a good idea because, hey, we're getting through the season okay. Never mind, well, this first came to light and discussions became public on the day that Sekou Smith, an NBA TV analyst, had his memorial service, the guy who died of COVID covering the NBA for the NBA's network. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me from a health and safety standpoint. I get LeBron's thought about decompression. The players all of a sudden feel like pawns in a shop here. They went through the bubble experiment in Orlando, incredibly taxing physically and mentally. I think players like and would appreciate the opportunity to have a bit of a break. Now, you know, win an NBA title, yes, you're going to have fewer days off. But for more than one reason, this appears unnecessary. Just...
Well, and, you know, like I said, I'm opposed to it. If for no other reason, then just give the guys a break. That, it, you know, they came in on the heels of the bubble, and the Lakers and the Heat had 71 days off. I mean, even the teams that were in the conference finals, it's not like they had that much more of an off season here. So just give them the time off. But as I said, look, I am opposed to it. But I don't, you know, if we want to play devil's advocate, what happens when we see players that weren't at All-Star Weekend that opted to opt out and just traveled and did whatever? What happens when we see most of those guys come back with positive tests and are out for a couple of weeks, and then everybody that was in Atlanta and quarantined and under the watchful eye of the league was fine? I mean, then that to me is even more that I understand you can't dictate
what they can and cannot do. Is this, from a player's perspective, is this more about decompressing and taking a break, or is it more about, we don't think this is healthy and safe? I think the players want them. I think they want that week off. I just think they want to just shut it down and decompress for a minute.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's why I don't know that it's quite. And look, let's also point this out: the NBA today announced they've had zero positive tests in the last 8 or so days, and that's on the heels of the week prior. They just had one positive test, and this was coming right in line with the changes that they made to some of the on-the-court stuff. I don't know how much of that has to do with it, but this comes after that when they started to see a spike and you started to see a handful of games that were being postponed daily. That started to go away now. So from the NBA's view, what we're doing is working, and if we get players, granted, I know they don't want to do this, but if we get players in Atlanta and we put on the All-Star game and we're able to keep those same policies in place and we're able to keep guys at a safe distance and they're only coming into town the day before the game, they're leaving immediately afterwards, we feel like we can safely pull this off, and we feel like it's going to be safer for them to be here where we have these protocols in place than for them to be off doing, you know, who knows what, traveling and going to visit their family and doing other things where, you know, it's all against NBA policy, but there's no real way to enforce it, that you're just hoping guys continue to take this seriously and are not doing that.
Let's talk to Dick in Port Washington. You're on Bucks Talk. Greetings, Dick.
Hey, whoever the meathead was that decided this was a good idea, I'd like to hear what his rationale is. Is what is the positive here? All you're facing is a negative. You take all these superstars, the guys that everyone tunes in and watches TV, listens to it on the radio, fly to Atlanta from all these different airports, okay? You know, Justin keeps saying, oh, the other guys, they could be at risk too. Nobody, if the 14th guy on the bench gets it, no one's really going to care except his fam, and it's horrible. I don't want him to get it. Don't get me wrong on that.
Let me cut you off, though, Dick. That's not at all true. If the 14th guy on the bench gets it, the whole team is at risk.
Right, but let me finish my point. My point is that you're taking all these guys, sending them to Atlanta, okay? So here's the deal. There's all these people that can have the virus that are asymptomatic, okay? All these all-stars. So they go back to their teams. You don't know what's going to happen with that. This just flies in the face of everything that Fauci and all these guys are saying. It's unnecessary. It's just plain unnecessary. And the whole league could implode. What if there's truly an infection that spreads amongst all these all-stars? What are you going to have left then? Who's going to be watching?
The risk that you run is there is somebody test positive at All-Star Weekend, and that is the absolute worst-case scenario, because then you have 26 other guys or 25 other guys that were within close contact of that player and have to go into close contact tracing. You do have some time to buffer between the season starting, but those guys are all at risk then. So that is certainly a concern. But if you can avoid that, and again, it's you know, asymptomatic, I get that, but it's not as though we're just going on the honor code here. The players are tested daily. They're going to be quarantined. It's going to be a very similar setup to the bubble. So the league is going to have much more control over this and have policies and procedures in place that they hope will prevent this. That's obviously the worst-case scenario, so you want to avoid that. But I don't like the idea, and most of my thinking on that is just give the guys a break. But, Greg, as you and I talked about before, too, I mean, look, just come out and say, we're doing this because of financial reasons, and we're doing this because of the partnership with TNT, and this is also going to help us with some of that revenue sharing. This is going to potentially help us avoid labor stoppages, and it's going to add more money to the salary cap, and we're not going to have to deal with more of what's the cap going to be at this year, and is it going to fluctuate at all? That's going to be alleviated a little bit because of the amount of money we're going to get from Turner to put on this All-Star game and the events. Just come out and say that.
Why do they discuss things like this? Why do they discuss it? Yeah, that's it. That's it. And I don't know exactly what would happen with all the dollars raised, and I'm sure the NBA is going to profit from it. Maybe there's an opportunity to give back COVID relief and so on.
Well, and that's part of the plan.
I'm sure there's potential for that.
Chris Paul's the president of the Players Association, and the plan is very similar to what we've seen Drew Holiday doing here with the Bucks and in the bubble, where he donated his bubble salary, and he's donated his salary from this season to local black-owned businesses in L.A. and Compton, in Indianapolis, where his wife is from, here in Milwaukee. So the plan is they're going to take some of the money they make from this and donate to those types of businesses that are black-owned and to some historically black colleges and universities. So they're going to try to use some of this to help out around them, but they're also going to be using this to help them out down the road.
855-616-1620 if you'd like to weigh in. 85% on our Twitter poll of the night say the All-Star game makes absolutely no sense. I am in agreement with you. Got about a half hour left to go on the program here. We'll do a little spin on Buck Swap coming up on the other side. Very strange situation developing in Brooklyn, and we'll even try and reset the 2018 draft. Well, so a couple members from that class on the floor tonight.
Real quick, again, we both agree that I'm not in favor of the All-Star game. That being said, I know 85% have said this doesn't make sense. Are you going to watch it? Are you going to tell me if this game is on TV, you're not going to watch it on Sunday night, March 7th?
Be interested to see what the counter programming is that night. So you might have spring training baseball. You might have some conference tournament basketball.
I believe there's an AEW pay-per-view if you're a wrestling fan, so you got that going on.
Okay. Is Coco Beware still wrestling? Jake the Snake still in the ring?
Not only is Coco Beware not wrestling, I don't think Coco Beware is breathing, Greg. So
he's wrestling in the squared circle in the sky. The squared circle in the sky. It's Bucks Talk on 94.5 ESPN and WTMJ.
You're listening to Bucks Talk, presented by Gruber Law Offices. One call, that's all. The Round Ball Repartee returns.
Ooh, I love repartee.
Do you?
Usually means there's a battle scene coming.
This is Bucks Talk, presented by Gruber Law Offices. One call, that's all.
If the Bucks hit their first three here, they'll have the lead. And Dante takes it and hits it. On time and on cue. The Big Ragu, top of the key, hits the Bucks first three of the night. And they take a one-point lead, forcing a Cleveland timeout.
Bucks just 7 of 22 from distance tonight, but 4 of 6 in the fourth quarter. En route to a 123-105 win over the Cavaliers. Night one of a back-to-back against Cleveland. Greg Matzik and Justin Garcia with you. It's Bucks Talk until 10:30 tonight.
It's like playing franchise mode in real life. Who do you want in a Bucks uniform? You pick one, but give up another. This is what we call Bucks Swap.
The choice is yours.
You can go with this, or you can go with that.
All right, so typically on Buck Swap, Justin, we play the game where we identify a player, not the stud, not the marquee player, not the obvious choice from the other team, more of a role player, a guy you think could look good in a Bucks uniform, and we say, all right, well, we'll bring this guy in, but we've got to give up this guy. I want to spin it a little differently tonight. I want to get your thoughts on two players. You could pick one. You could have Colin Sexton, or you could have Jared Allen on the Milwaukee Bucks. Who are you taking?
I guess I would take Colin Sexton. Yeah. I mean, when you started with Colin Sexton, I was sure you were going to say Darius Garland next, and I was going to say, well, it's easy. I'll take Colin Sexton. I guess I would take Colin Sexton in this one. I mean, there's a lot to like about Jared Allen, and we saw it tonight. I don't know. I know he hit one tonight. I don't know that Jared Allen is really going to develop that outside shot, and that's the only reason really why I would lean towards Colin Sexton over Jared Allen. That as great as Jared Allen is, I think Colin Sexton is only going to get better, and he can impact the game on the offensive end. And Jared Allen, look, is probably the best defensive center, either he or Rudy Gobert, in the NBA right now. But I just, that and where the league is headed, I wonder, we're seeing it with a lot of teams, and we wondered if we'd see it with the Bucks, with their makeup. I think you start to limit yourself in terms of what you can do as a team when that's your best defender, and it's one of the more traditional – throwback big men that Jared Allen is.
So this is, to me, it's the underappreciated and underreported aspect of the James Harden trade. Harden is the headliner. Yeah, I get it, right? The big three in Brooklyn, that team's going to score a million points. And you start looking at the Cavaliers Hall from that. They end up with Torian Prince. They end up with Allen. They've got a decision to make on Kevin Love. There's no doubt about that. He didn't play tonight. Larry Nance Jr. didn't play tonight. That's another solid role player. But young, interesting, you mix in the veteran and Andre Drummond. Like, I thought when that move was made, the Cavaliers got pretty interesting. I love Jared Allen. Watching him and Colin Sexton play tonight, you can see why there's some excitement in Cleveland. Jared Allen is a bit of a throwback. He plays above the rim. He's an all-effort guy. He's still young. I mean, he's 23. Sexton is a lottery pick, and he's a blur. And defensively, he might not give you quite as much, but offensively, he can be a microwave. And dude can finish at the rim. It always seems to get up over and in the rim. I struggled with this one. I lean towards Sexton, but there isn't an aspect of Jared Allen's game I don't like. I wouldn't say he's pure from three. He's a little more throwback. But he hit one tonight. Okay. But his stat line is pristine this evening. And it feels like he's the kind of guy that you look at the box score, and then you watch the game, and you realize watching the game, he affects it much more than the box score sometimes indicates.
Well, that was the first three he had even attempted this season, and he's up to, I think, 67 in his career in five seasons. So, I mean, look, you never say never. I just don't see Jared Allen developing that shot. The most he ever took was 45, which came 2 years ago, and that was when Kenny Atkinson was still running things in Brooklyn. And we know Kenny Atkinson, I mean, that was, he came under Bud's tree, and that was one of the things that Kenny Atkinson brought to the team. So I wonder how much that'll change. I know Jared Allen is probably underrated, and not a whole lot of people, if you're just a casual fan, don't know who he is, but that was a thing that got a lot of talk when that trade went through is, man, the Cavs really pulled one off here, that they gave up that pick. I believe it was the Bucks' first-round pick. They gave up the pick and got Jared Allen instead, where a lot of people had talked about, and there were stories that came out as well. Brooklyn did not want to give up Jared Allen. They were trying to get another first-round pick or something in the mix where they could keep Allen and give something else up, but there was just no way that the deal was going to work out without Jared Allen in the mix.
Well, and you can see why, right? Brooklyn doesn't have a defense. There's just not much to speak of there. You eliminate the best defender on the team, and you can understand the frustration. So Allen was the number 22 pick in the 2017 draft. Sexton was the number 8 pick in the 2018 draft. In the same draft, Dante DiVincenzo was taken by the Bucks with pick number 17. If you're going to reestablish a top 10 from the 2018 draft, how much shuffling do you think there really is at the top? Does DiVincenzo go higher? Is he a top 10 guy? Does Luka go number one instead of DeAndre Ayton to the Suns? Probably. Does Trae Young move into that number two role? Like, all of a sudden, this draft, like, that first round is, there's some meat. There's some players that can have a long NBA careers that come out of that draft.
I just off of memory, I guess Luka is the obvious that he would go one and Trae Young would probably go two. I mean, Colin Sexton, I think, would probably go up a little bit. But you have, I mean, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, I believe, was in that draft as well. So there's a lot of big names. Jaren Jackson Jr. was in that draft too. So there's a lot of, you know, good guys and guys that are going to be rotational players and at least guys that that give productivity to their team. So, you know, in terms of productivity, that's going to be a pretty nice draft, it looks like, from the start at least. And who knows? I mean, Luka Doncic could end up being a Dirk Nowitzki-type player for his franchise. We talked about Trae Young, who has the ability to do the same thing as well, that you just look at a couple of the names in that draft. Like, Marvin Bagley is the one that, for as much as we get on the Atlanta Hawks for that trade, Marvin Bagley is going to be the one that jumps out the most. Where, you know, granted, if you're Atlanta, would you even right now rather have Luka Doncic than Trae Young? I think if you held them down and injected them with truth serum, they would say, yes, we made a mistake there. I know we got the additional pick, and we used that to get some more young guys in place the following year. But, yes, in hindsight, we would rather have Luka Doncic. But the Marvin Bagley one is the biggest head-scratcher, where you had Vlade, who had a relationship with Luka's dad in their international play, and you still, not only do you not get Luka, not only do you not get Trae Young, you go with Marvin Bagley. That's going to be the one we look back on years from now and say, wait a minute, the Kings took Marvin Bagley second in that draft?
I remember watching that draft play out, hoping that Michael Porter Jr. would fall to the Bucks at 17 and thinking that there was a shot. Remember, he had some back issues coming out of Missouri. People thought he could have been the number one overall pick going into his freshman season at Missouri. And then he ends up sliding. And sliding. And he ends up at Denver at 14. I love watching that guy play. There's just a silkiness to Michael Porter Jr. I was hoping that he would get to the Bucks at 17. And then Lonnie Walker was also there, I remember. And I think he went the very next pick to the Spurs. Like, and I was in on Dante. This was not a hard pass by any stretch, and Dante's proven himself to be a fine player. But those were the guys that I remember thinking, this would be interesting. Porter, Walker, Dante was in that discussion. And, of course, the Bucks ended up with DiVincenzo.
Yeah, I mean, outside of seeing Trae Young highlights that year and seeing some from Luka Doncic, I'm not going to pretend that I really follow. And I mean, DeAndre Ayton I suck because Arizona's the only team that I somewhat follow. But I don't
really
follow.
Well, he was getting paid like a pro, too.
Well, okay. I don't really follow a ton of college basketball just because with it going on the same time as the Bucks season, I just don't have the time to keep up with it. The one thing I remember from that year ties back to Colin Sexton. And do you remember that year when Colin Sexton was playing for Alabama? There was a game where I believe he got hurt in the game too, but they had ejections and injuries, and Alabama ended up playing the last 10 or so minutes of that game with only three players on the floor. And Colin Sexton was one of those players. And I want to say they won the game, or at least it was very close. That it 5-on-3, it shouldn't be close, but it was a close game.
I do remember that game, and I remember thinking that Colin Sexton should have moved up to the top two pick in that draft. He just carried a team. It was on his back for a while, and then the mess happened that you suggested. And
yeah,
I can go back and look at the stats.
They lost. So they played the 14th-ranked Minnesota Golden Gophers, and they lost 89-84 to even be within five.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, it was compelling.
When you're playing 5-on-3 for 10 minutes.
There's a lot of firepower out of that draft, and really at the guard position with Doncic, Trae Young, Sexton. That's a pretty impressive trio right there. Lonnie Walker's been a nice player so far. Aaron Holiday, one of the Holidays. Anthony Simons, we saw him last week. He's young. He's got a ways to go, but that's a piece I know they're excited about in Portland.
Yeah, I mean, I just pulled it up now, and I mean, DeAndre Ayton has still been a nice player for the Suns, but Doncic, Trae Young, Jaren Jackson Jr., you know, Wendell Carter Jr. has looked okay for the Bulls. I know G. Hill would maybe dispute that, but Colin Sexton, as we talked about, both of the Bridges, Mikhail and Miles, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was the 11th pick in that draft, and Michael Porter Jr., we all knew, was the ultimate X factor, where he had that back injury at Missouri, and that kept him out. And as we saw, it was mostly the injury you hear about, but there were some also off-the-court red flags, and we've seen some of those in Denver, but the talent's certainly there. So this was one of the more interesting drafts, at least in terms of the talent that we had in this draft in recent years.
The final selection in the 2018 NBA draft, Kostas Antetokounmpo to the 76ers out of Dayton. We will wrap up Bucks Talk with a strange situation in Brooklyn. News trickling in by the moment here involving Kevin Durant. We'll have it for you after this on Bucks Talk.
Stick around. Bucks Talk continues next. Presented by Gruber Law Offices. One call, that's all. This is Bucks Talk, presented by Gruber Law Offices. One call, that's all.
it up, sent out of there by Giannis. How about that? Giannis will pick it up. Bucks trailing by two. Giannis down the lane to the rim. Lay it up. No good. Got his own rebound and slams it. Would not be denied. Even Drummond couldn't hold him off. Tie game at 79.
An 18-point win for the Bucks kicks off a six-game road trip. It'll be the Bucks and Cavaliers again tomorrow night in Cleveland. Very much a dominant effort from Giannis once again, as you might expect. Every starting player for both teams scored in double figures tonight. Giannis, the leader, 33 points, 12 rebounds. He was 6 of 8 from the free throw line, 13 of 25 from the field, 1 of 3 from three-point land. He was spoke about the All-Star game following the game. Paraphrasing here, but Giannis has no interest in playing in the All-Star game, saying, we got to follow the big dog, LeBron James. The big dog says he has zero excitement, zero energy. I'm the same way. I really, right now, don't care about the All-Star game. I can't worry about an All-Star game. I want to see my family. One of many different and interesting storylines developing around the NBA. Now, one of the more bizarre stories of the season happening tonight in Brooklyn, and it has nothing to do with the overweight James Harden, who seems to be rounding back into shape, Justin. It has everything to do with Kevin Durant. So Kevin Durant was in and out of tonight's game, and if I'm understanding this correctly, was pulled twice from the game because he was deemed a close contact to someone with COVID-19. Now, never mind, Kevin Durant has tested negative several times, including twice today, but out of an abundance of caution, that's the phrase of the year, Kevin Durant was pulled out of tonight's game. Never mind that he played a portion of tonight's game. So he already peed in the pool, pardon the analogy, and then was taken from tonight's game. Not only was he taken from tonight's game after playing in it, but he will not be traveling with the team to play the Philadelphia 76ers in what could be an Eastern Conference Finals preview. I hope I'm wrong on that, but it could be.
As we were talking about before, this was starting to unfold the same time as our game. So there was a few people that had told me, hey, our own Ashton Rotman being one of them, man, you see what's going on with KD? And I had, no idea. I thought maybe Kevin Durant has another burner account situation going on. And then you see Kevin Durant pulled from the game. Kevin Durant back in the game. So he was pulled from – he was in the starting lineup, at least announced as one of the starters in the initial sheet that you give, and then pulled from that and changed to where he wasn't a scratch, but he didn't start the game and still made his way into the game. And then I think it was the third quarter they pulled him out. After the game, he tweeted something about, like, free me or something, I think it was. And then he just tweeted again, yo, NBA, your fans aren't dumb. You can't fool them with your whack PR tactics. Free 7.
Well, if you're going to pull a guy from contact tracing, don't you just have to take everybody else off the court? what I'm saying?
And James Harden said something similar in his post game of, I don't know what the negative is, if he's talking about his test, but he said when he was asked about it, he's been negative, so I don't understand what the problem is. We should have just postponed the game then.
So Kevin Durant tested negative 3 times today, 3 times in the last 24 hours, including twice today. Someone he interacted with this afternoon had an inconclusive test shortly before the game. So Durant was initially held out while that test result was being processed. And then he goes into the game and then is pulled out of the game. Well, contact tracing, health and safety protocols. We got to pull you from the game. Never mind, he rubbed elbows and bumped with 9 other players on the floor and was socially distant, I suppose, when sitting on the bench. It's a very strange story, but Kevin Durant is not going to play for the Nets when they take on the Philadelphia 76ers. We are out of time, sadly, on the program tonight. We are out of time, but Justin and Pratik Patel will be in tomorrow night following the Bucks and Cavs round 2, 123. To whatever it was, the final. That was an 18-point win. I can't do the math. Thank you very much, Justin. See what happens when you get to 10:30 on an evening, Friday evening. 4-foot drifts outside my window. Thanks
also,
for listening to Bucks Talk.
Also, our apologies to Coco Beware. Yeah. He's still alive.
Oh, good man. Is he really?
He is. He and Frankie, the parrot.
No, there's no way that Frankie's like the ultimate warrior. Yeah, there's got to be like seven or eight Frankies.
But Coco Beware is very much alive, so my apologies for killing him.
I'm sure there's been like nine different Frankies over the course of time. We're out of here. It's Bucks Talk. Thanks for hanging.